Hi, I'm Kate Flannery, and I played Meredith Palmer on The Office.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Office Deep Dive with me. That's right, your host, Brian Baumgartner. On today's show, we have the incredible Kate Flannery, as you just heard. Now, I have always felt a special bond with Kate, because I think more than anyone else in the cast, Kate and I, we put our bodies on the line for the show. I mean, just in terms of pure physical comedy and like shameless personal humiliation, I think Kate and I deserve medals for bravery. And maybe Kate most of all. She was just completely fearless, and she was always up for anything she was asked to do. In fact, the last time I saw Kate before we sat down for this conversation, I went to see Kate in a taping for Dancing with the Stars that Kate was a contestant on. And she asked me to come see her perform, and I went. And let me be honest, it's kind of a weird experience. You're in this giant warehouse. There are assistants moving around everywhere. There's applause signs telling you when to laugh and when to clap and when to stand and when to sit. And then all of a sudden, the music starts, and Kate literally descends from the ceiling because she's doing this Mary Poppins number. She's Mary Poppins. And I see her start descending, and I immediately start crying. I am overcome with emotion because the fearlessness, and let's be honest, we're not spring chickens. And she had total commitment, and she was dancing her heart out. But that's Kate. Anyway, I did not cry in this interview, but we did talk about how Kate had to flash her boobs a lot on the show. So that was the thing. We didn't cry, but we talked about boobs. How's that for a setup? Without any more blabbering from me, here is the woman who bared it all for your entertainment, Kate Flannery.
Bubble and squeak, I love it. Bubble and squeak, I know. Bubble and squeak, I cook it every morning, left over from the night before.
Well, well, well.
I'm so sorry. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How's it going?
Oh, my gosh.
Dude, this is awesome. They have you locked in a box.
They have me locked in a box. This is not our regular studio.
Oh, okay.
Yes. This I thought was construction.
Oh.
But apparently it's a Foley.
Are you going to make Foley sounds?
Yeah, I'm going to just start running on the grass.
You could recreate the fire drill scene. Yeah,
right. Exactly.
Hysterical.
You can throw your coat on the thing unless you're cold.
I was. That's up to you. I'm not.
Is she fine here on the mic?
Can I talk about people behind their back on this?
Yeah.
Can I curse? Am I allowed?
You can say whatever you want.
Not that I curse.
Now, I know some of this, but 2004.
Yes.
What? Well, first of all, what was your training exactly? Like, what were you doing work-wise before The Office?
Well, I was in Chicago right after college. I studied theater in Philadelphia and Virginia for a couple years. And then I graduated from the University of Arts in Philly. And then my aunt sent me a ticket to check out Chicago and Second City because she thought it'd be a good fit. So I studied at Second City, and then I got hired by the touring company. So I knew Steve. Steve was in one of the resident companies when I was touring. But then I moved to New York. I did the year-long tour of The Real Life Brady Bunch a few years later, and then moved to New York for 6 months, and then got asked to do the show Valley of the Dolls in L.A., and then was here for about a year, and then came close to a few different shows. I was like up for the Dana Carvey show, which obviously Steve Carell and Steve Colbert got. Right. I tested for it, didn't get to, I came close. And then the show I was doing went off Broadway, so I went to New York because I was in New York for 3 years.
Okay.
I'm old, dude.
How long were you in Chicago?
5 years.
So you were in Chicago.
Yeah.
In and around Second City for 5 years.
Yes.
Then went back to New York, then LA.
Yep.
Then back to New York for 3 years. And then when did you come back to LA?
'99, I moved back because I got a new manager. And I was basically like waiting tables and started to do my comedy act, The Lampshades, and was, you know, just like doing some guest star stuff. I did Bernie Mac. I guess Creed was in the same episode that I did of Bernie Mac.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, he didn't have any lines. He was just like a doctor in the background or something. Yeah, it was just so funny. And then I booked a recurring gig on Boomtown. And my second episode, we were about to shoot and they said that the show got canceled. So that was that.
Oh my God.
And then I had auditioned for the pilot of The Office. I was up for the part of Jan. I read for the part of Jan, did not get it. Obviously, they went a completely different way. But Allison Jones said that, I think the show is good for you, which was awesome. And then I just remember like doing my comedy act, like Lampshades, like we were supposed to do so many things and like kind of fell through. We were supposed to be on Mad TV for 4 episodes and then like they canceled. It was a whole lot of almost. And then I remember getting a call that they were trying to fill a spot after they shot the pilot in like August. You guys shot in February. And in August, I got the call to go in and read for Allison Jones. And then by the time I got home from that, then I found out I got the job because I didn't have a cell phone. So I had to wait for my landline to get the message.
Okay. So wait, so you read for Jan. I did not know that.
Yeah. Yep. I did. But there would be too much sexual chemistry between me and Steve if I got that part. Anyway, she said she still thought I would be a good, like, that's what I love about Allison. It's like she remembers things. So I somehow registered, you know. And I remember going to the next audition for what became Meredith. I don't think she was called Meredith at the audition. But I remember they said no makeup, and like really no makeup. Usually when they say no makeup, it's like lip gloss and some mascara.
Right. But Allison was like really no makeup.
Yeah, she's
makeup.
Like, no. Take it off. Take it off. Take off the lashes. No, I wasn't wearing much, but yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So then you came back and at the time do you remember what the description was of the character?
It just said she was lactose intolerant, divorced, and had a hysterectomy. Go. Very light shell, right?
Yeah. And you knew, who did you know?
I knew Angela because we were in an improv group, an all-chick improv group called Bitch Planet in 2000 in LA. And I knew Steve because I knew him from Second City. And also, he did the first few months of the Really Brady Bunch. He was the first Greg Brady when we used to do that crazy show. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Crazy. But there was so much sexual chemistry between me and Steve that we could. I'm just kidding. Sorry.
I mean, you definitely showed your boobs to him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time we shot that Christmas episode, he said, I'm not looking at them. I'm just going to stare at your clavicle. I was like, I think should I be insulted by that? Should I feel bad? I don't know what to do. He was such a gentleman, though. Really, I knew it was my best interest at heart that he had.
I have said many times, in terms of just pure comedy and the direction with McDougal and like everything, that moment with you at the end might be one of my favorite moments.
Oh my God.
Of the whole series.
Well, I think it's just so well directed too. And so like just the way that it played, it was such a subtle, unexpected, crazy.
So unexpected. And you have that like, that like gasp in of like, oh my gosh. And then him, just the look on his face and picking up that camera and taking a picture just is so perfect.
Absolutely. And even the moment after where you're like, he's not going to do anything. Like he's like, he's done. That was it. That's all he wanted was the picture, which is so fantastic because I feel like so many other actors would have played that differently. And Steve had such economy and such brilliant. I mean, I'm sure you remember this, but I feel like every you never knew exactly what he was going to do. And he could do six different things in different takes, like completely different with the same words, with the same dialogue, and just be like, make these really amazing, subtle, strong choices. Crazy great.
I felt like I was watching someone who thought, I have to make the people in here laugh.
Right.
Like, that's what I'm going to do. And if we rehearse it and we do this and we do that, like, then everyone's going to expect what's going to happen.
Yes. He's so great at that. Yeah, that's so well put. Yeah. He definitely had a plan. He definitely had many, many ideas all the time. Oh my God, I'm such a deadbeat as an actor when I think of him. He's really one of those rare gems, and you know, it's just shocking that he didn't win an Emmy for that role.
kind of a trap.
Yeah, it is a travesty. But he's not a politician. He's never been. Never been. So, and I think some of it's politics, which is...
So you come back in, and you are now reading for Meredith, or unnamed hysterectomy character.
Right.
And did they show you the pilot? Did you see the pilot?
I saw the pilot later. I saw the pilot,
After you were cast?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Did you have any specific thoughts about it?
Well, I was nervous that it was exactly like the British pilot. I think everybody was nervous. But I still thought it was funny. And I thought what they added that was American was really funny. What's that? You know, and I thought everyone was much more understandable than the British version. I'm one of those people that watches the British Office with subtitles because I want to get it all. Is that terrible?
No, it's not terrible. When I walk through life with you, I need subtitles too. But you're just like Philly, Pennsylvania.
Right?
Yeah.
Am I hard to understand? Scranton.
So I heard that Greg made a conscious decision to stay as close to the British pilot because he thought if he did, the network couldn't give notes.
Oh, wow. Brilliant. That makes so much sense. And I remember my boyfriend, Chris Haston, who I met on the show, he's a still photographer for NBC. He was shooting the pilot gallery, and he was told, if anybody looks at the camera, except for Steve, that's it. We're done. Like, Greg really wanted to look documentarian. And Chris said there were so many specific instructions because Greg was so protective of making sure to get this absolutely right. Thank God.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So even in the PR shoots, Chris, the photographer, was directed.
Yes. Which is never the case. I mean, very rarely. There might be a note or two, but nothing this intense. And Greg was like, just, you know, very stressed out about it. He just wanted to be absolutely right.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Do you feel like you had any specific hurdles or anything you had to overcome specifically because you weren't on the pilot?
Well, I wasn't sure if I was coming back every week. I wasn't sure. I remember talking to Phyllis about it. She goes, I think you might. I'm like, okay. Because I definitely felt like I was getting stories because I'm allowed to say that I replaced somebody from the pilot.
Yeah.
So I was getting stories that, like, you know, they're going to see, you know, if this is actually even a place. Like, maybe it's, you know, maybe this character won't even exist. I don't even know. So there was pressure, definitely. But I was like, okay, we'll see. I mean, everybody's nice. I don't know if you remember this, they told us to bring paperwork, so the first season, we literally sat at our desks because they wanted us to really be busy doing what looked like real office work. I thought that was so brilliant.
Yeah. Do you think that did anything to help create the ensemble?
I do, because I feel like everyone had a focus immediately. You weren't like looking for someone to throw you the ball. And if you did get the ball, you were busy doing your work. Like, that's what people doing a documentary. I mean, it must be so uncomfortable for somebody in a regular Scranton, Pennsylvania office to have a camera around. Like, that's not a comfort zone. There's nothing comfortable about that. So I love that was part of the mix. And then we had all this weird medical paperwork that was like, the prop department bought. So I remember creating these like weird little patterns of stapling things and and I remember Jenna and I had a whole dance where we would have these weird clearance papers that we would sign for each other. It was so bizarre, but it was fantastic.
Right. Right. No one's talked about that before, but yeah, like our prop papers were essentially old expired medical documents from people's procedures, like
a ton of them. They lasted for years.
Yes. And I remember doing the same thing, like, oh, okay. And I would pull pieces of paper that looked more like Excel, like that,
like
looked
numbers.
Like numbers.
Yeah. That's
and
so
graph.
Funny.
Right.
That's
so like,
so
I,
funny.
So like if I had a whole thing that was mostly writing, I was like, well, this doesn't really look right. Right. Like, I need something that looks like numbers.
Of course.
And then you would look and it would be like, yeah, red blood cell count numbers for Jason Alexander from 1976.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Wow. Jason's okay, though, everybody. It's okay.
I think he's all right. Yeah.
It was bizarre. This is so pre-internet.
Recycling.
There you go. All right. We were doing some green work. You're hilarious. Recycling. This is true. Repurposing.
Repurposing. Yes. A paper company office needs paper.
Right.
Ladies and gentlemen, we were not destroying trees for this television show.
That's hilarious. And of course, you know, Ken Kwapa is directing, like, go ahead. He'd never say action. Go ahead. Loved him. But understanding that, like, you're not just suddenly turning on. You're already in it. You're working. So just continue. Go ahead. It's perfect. It's like the perfect direction.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
We talked to him about that some, too.
Such a genius.
Yeah. Bringing us in early and having that 30 minutes of, like, work time.
Yeah.
And having us all there together in that room doing BS paperwork.
Yes.
You know,
and quiet.
And
yes.
Very quiet.
So quiet. Painful sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then you would just hear, like, John or Leslie or Phyllis pretend to be on a sales
phone.
Call.
Sure, sure. And I also remember during the healthcare episode, that was the first time I improvised. And the whole thing about the uterus is different from a vagina. I still have a vagina. Yeah, I remember Greg telling me, I ran into him. I was still waiting tables during the first season. And I would see some people from the show at my restaurant. And I would see Ken Kwapa sometimes. And then I saw Greg and I wasn't waiting on him, but he came up to me. He goes, I had to talk to you. I love that he, like, completely ignored that I was wearing a uniform. It was fantastic. He goes, I'm fighting with the network about vagina. I just really want to keep it in. I'm really hoping it works out. And I was like, yeah. I mean, like, you just can't.
He came up to you. So
yeah.
You're working at Kate Manolini still.
Which is this Beverly Hills fancy restaurant where every famous person on the planet came in. Yeah.
So you were there through, when did you stop?
I stopped right before we started season two. So literally a couple of weeks. So I covered my shifts during the week and then I used to work my Sunday brunch. And then because we only shot, it was, you know, after the pilot, it was just 5 episodes. So.
Right.
And then I remember Amy Heckerling came in with her parents. Brian Gordon came in. A few people came in and they kind of gave me this look like, oh, hi. I'm sorry. They were a little condescending or a little too sympathetic. I was like, it's fine. Whatever. I'm the 40-year-old waitress. I know. I get it. Steve's the 40-year-old virgin. I'm the 40-year-old waitress. Whatever. I mean, it is what it is, you know? And then when Greg came in, he completely ignored the fact that I was wearing, like, I love him for that so much. I mean, I'm sure he just was like, oh, we got business to attend to. Let's get to it, you know?
So were you still working there
when it started airing, yeah.
Did you have people come up to you?
I did. Actually, one time someone asked me, they said, hey, I have a question for you. Are you lactose intolerant? And I said, yes, thanks for not bringing up my hysterectomy. So stupid. That was like their way of, yeah. And then I remember, like, Marty Panzer, who was Barry Manilow's lyricist, was pissed because he said, I came in here on Tuesday nights and you're not here, but everybody, nobody wants to wait on me because they're all watching the show. They're all up at the bar watching you and I can't get any good service. Like, whatever. Looks like you made it. So stupid. So dumb. Oh my God.
Did you think the show would be picked up?
I wasn't sure. And I remember we didn't get invited to the first upfronts. And I remember thinking, like, okay, well, and I think technically we weren't regulars till Booze Cruise. But I felt like we had a shot. I felt like there was some vibe, something that just felt different from anything else I'd ever been involved with.
Yeah.
It was really intense and really great. And it just unfolded so wonderfully. It was like a slow, steady, wonderful rise, which never happens in this town.
Right.
And I know that there had been mockumentary movies like Spinal Tap and stuff, but never a TV show. Even some of the mockumentary stuff, like, I feel like our show is up with the very best. I mean, I really feel that way. Even all 9 seasons, like, there's things where you just go, oh, yes, yes.
So The Office, you know, I want to tell you, I have this sort of theory that part of the specialness, not sure it's a word, specialness or uniqueness of the ensemble had to do with, you know,
how attractive we all were.
How
completely
fucking sexy we were. No, but
that was new. You know that was a new thing. You know, I mean, that was definitely a concept, is that we were not supposed to be attractive.
Right.
And I felt like I held that mantle pretty well all 9 years, I just have to say. Some people ask for a little more makeup. I was like, nope, I'm sticking with the game. Sticking with it. Love it. Lived it. Living it. Love it. And my boyfriend used to say I look better taking out the trash than I did on the show, and which is fine with me. It's fine, you know.
Right.
And now I know I'm not looking so good. People go, you look exactly like you did on the show. Compliment and a dig.
Yes.
I'll take it all.
you know, we're in the same space, but you had you and Steve and Angela and Oscar who you were great improvisers, right?
Yeah.
And Rain and I, we were doing Chekhov, right? And then you had BJ and Craig doing stand-up, right?
Sure, so true. And you know, I love the way you broke it down. And were you in the Seagull or Three Sisters when you and Rain Chekhov?
Three sisters, three sisters. We did Three Sisters together. I also did the Seagull.
I was in the Seagull in college.
I think I was in the Three Sisters at least twice, once with Rain.
Hilarious.
Yeah. But yeah, no, it's crazy.
That's so right on.
I mean, truly, like I was doing the darkest of darkest.
Yes.
Drama.
Totally, and
it wasn't
totally
even comedy.
Worked. No. I used to always say that I was in a drama. I used to say that to Greg.
Right.
And actually he said that to me once. He goes, this isn't a drama. And I was like, it's for me. It is like.
Right. You are the only person from Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Zach Woods is too.
Oh, Zach
yes,
Woods.
Yes. He's from Bucks County, but he came along later. So I was the one always bitching to get Tasty Cakes into the vending machines because there really is no vending machine in Pennsylvania that does not have Tasty Cakes in. We eventually did, but it was very brief. That's all right. Mission accomplished.
They were too expensive.
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Maybe.
What do you think about setting the show specifically in Scranton, Pennsylvania?
It goes along with Slough, England, which is this kind of forgettable town that had a glory day. But I mean, growing up in Philadelphia, Scranton was a joke. So it was always the butt of many jokes.
I think what Greg did was he got very, very specific and used contradictory ideas that you don't see in television.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, there's the big dumb guy, Kevin, but he's really good at basketball.
Right.
And he's a poker savant. But Meredith as well, like the ways that she was very specific.
Yes, yes. And sometimes I didn't always, like every once in a while I remember improvising and feeling like, I'm not sure if this is going to work, whatever. I felt like season three was a little bit of a struggle. I felt like I mean, there was a little more trial and error or something. And then I feel like once we got to season four, once I got hit by the car in the Fun Run episode, it was like, we're off to the races. But season three, I felt like I was particularly cut out a lot. And I felt like some of it was like we were trying for things that didn't quite hit. And some of that may have just been me not getting it. But I was a little bit like, oh my gosh, I hope we find something, you know, subtly. And boy, did we. But just kind of like understanding like another layer of like, oh, she's a mess, but she's also not a victim, and she's not as involved, but in a very conscious way. She's not excluded. She just wants to stay in her lane. Like literally, like she doesn't want to get involved with, I don't know. I've had women come up to me and be like, oh my God, I'm the Meredith of my office. And it's not just because they're like a drinker, because they usually are, and they're loud and proud. So I totally believe them. Like only a Meredith would be like, I'm Meredith. Wow. You know, it's like, that to me is like the ultimate compliment.
Right.
It's fantastic. You know, my dad owned a bar. I don't know if you knew this, but
yes.
So I'm a bar owner's daughter. Do you remember that Halloween episode, the first Halloween episode that was supposed to be when it was revealed that Meredith was a drinker and the whole thing got cut. And I remember Paul Feig was like, I'm so sorry. The network just wanted more of Michael Scott handing candy to the kids from his new condo. I'm like, oh. Anyway, my dad owned a bar, and my dad understood the complexities of alcoholics, too. And some of them were extremely functional in some ways and charming in others, and then blow it and then get back, you know, really mess up their life and then get it back together. You know, there's little elements. I feel like there were subtle things that kept showing up, like Meredith's relationship with her son, Jakey, and, you know, bring your daughter to work day. Meredith brings her son, who's a nightmare, and calls Michael Scott Mr. Poop. So good. So good.
Right.
But again, like, and Meredith's like ever forgiving, and she's not like a mean mom. She's she's a little indulgent, you know, which again, like, I don't know if that would have been my first choice, but I totally respect it and I get it. I see that in other people and I think, oh my God, the writing was so great. Like, they really did not need my help.
Right. I think you touched on something that I never really thought about before, but you have a lot of kind of wonderful moments with Michael Scott.
Specifically
with him, you know, there's obviously the Christmas episode where, you know, you flash him for the first time.
Right.
Fun Run, when he hits you with the car, breaks your pelvis. There's a very tender moment at the end of that. Episode when you hear what he's done for you.
Right. The lollipop,
It's interesting to me that Meredith functions kind of solo.
Sort of,
In the group of an ensemble. I mean, this has never occurred to me before. Yeah. But, you know, that sort of iconic shot of you playing solitaire on the computer, like, there's some connection to that. And you weren't, by and large, you weren't going over and hanging out at sales or coming over to the accountant, which I think gave your character an opportunity to do a lot of special things. And obviously, you being gifted physically as well.
Well, it's fun to get to do the physical comedy. And I was thinking, you know, the Valentine episode, the first Valentine episode, season two, when Phyllis is getting all these gifts and Pam is really upset and you just see, you know, Meredith with her big gulp and then we find out that she's drinking and then she's passed out with the lime in her hair. I mean, that to me was like, what a perfect, perfect little, just perfect enough. We get it. We've been there. We know that. I mean, again, there's so many layers and it's just, I don't know. I just feel so... just so fortunate to be a part of something that will, I think, always have a respect level that most other TV shows don't have. I really don't.
Yeah. How do you feel like Kate influenced Meredith?
For one, I was always willing to do most of my own stunts. And for me, that made it more fun. I felt like I was really experiencing more, if that makes any sense. And I also think the audience knows sometimes when, you know, there's, you know, I don't know if you guys used to watch The Bionic Woman, but there was always like some 6-foot guy in a blonde wig pretending to be Jamie Summers, like so bad. But yeah, it made me feel a little more part of the process. And I felt like it was one of my strengths and I really enjoyed it. So when I was planking in the men's room and Dwight comes and blows me off the top of the stall with the fire extinguisher, that was me. So, you know.
You didn't do one thing though.
There's a couple things I didn't do. I didn't get my hair on fire. I did not light my hair on fire. When I heard that there was like face gel involved, I was like, I don't know if I want to.
Oh, really. I didn't know that. No, yeah, I just meant you didn't shave. You didn't shave
And
your
I didn't
head.
Shave my head. I did not.
Yeah. Good for you.
I think I disappointed Greg, but that's okay.
Really?
He was shocked. He was like, really? I'm like, I'm sorry, but no. My hair is my thing. What?
Actually, leading into that, there was so much sexual stuff.
Yeah.
With Meredith?
Yeah, my parents were so happy about that. My dad's so Catholic, he's like, ugh, what is going on?
When people say that we couldn't do the show today, do you think that's a part of it? I was reminded doing the research about you selling sex for steak.
Yeah, for steak coupons. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But she was contrite. She admitted it. And she was asking for forgiveness, right? There's got to be, I mean, there's some conscience in that, which is funny and sad. I mean, that's the best thing about The Office is it's the funny and sad.
Right. There was a time I thought Kevin and Meredith might.
We did kiss that one time.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I do.
Did that make it on the air? I can't.
I don't remember now. What was the context of that?
Oh my God, I know. I can't remember. It was at my desk.
Yeah, why did we do that? Was it a party? I remember
this. It was like a test. Like
I remember. I think about it every night. I just can't remember what the
context. There's so much sexual tension between you and I. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. What was it? I can't remember.
Shoot. I'm not sure. Oh, my gosh.
I felt like they toyed. I felt like the writers toyed with it for a minute.
Sure. Yes, they did. I do remember this a little bit. And I think it was before the Valentine episode when Kevin was looking for a girlfriend.
Okay.
I think it was before that. It was to be explored.
That's so fun. I forgot that.
We're not live, so we can't have a fan phone in.
No, we can't.
Answer. Damn it.
No. yeah, I'm gonna have to think about that. Yeah, I don't know that it aired. Now that I'm thinking about
it. It may not have.
Was that tough for you, though, the getting naked part?
It was a little like, holy shit. But it was a little like jumping out of an airplane. And I will tell you, as great as, Randall and Matt were, I always felt like I didn't get much eye contact at lunch after we shot me being topless. It was a little uncomfortable. And I think the last season 9, there was an episode where we're watching parts of the documentary at Oscar's desk in a scene, and I would have like a little bit of moleskin and it fell, and Ed's like, whoa, 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 we have to stop this. He was like, we could really see your boob. I'm like, oh no. And I had no idea. I was so embarrassed.
Oh, I forgot about that.
I was like, ah! Yeah.
No, but you were so fearless in both the physicality that you did and the pranks that you did. I feel like you and I did a lot of really bad. Like I remember the one which you wouldn't think about it, like watching the show, but we were loading boxes. The warehouse was gone.
Oh,
and
we were
loading up a thing.
Right.
And there was like oil on the warehouse floor, and we were like pushing boxes. Like that was our idea to be more efficient, was to push boxes. And they just kept having me fall. And I'm like, guys, this is concrete. Like, this is not, like, there's no padding.
Right.
There's no thing there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got
that. That was, I think, the hardest one, from weirdly.
Yeah.
Like, you wouldn't think it.
Right. No. But it's those little things, because you're not padded. And no, I totally, no, there was no safety meeting about it before. Like, seriously, like, there's a reason why they used to do that stuff, because you don't want to get hurt.
Well, me holding you on my back.
Oh, my God. With the lip dub stress.
Yeah.
That was intense. That's one of those things. That's like, what drugs was someone on? Who came up with that idea that Meredith strapped on Kevin's back?
Crazy. Make the idiots perform like monkeys. What do you remember about finding out that Steve was leaving?
I literally was with Creed. We were on the set of The Office doing like a satellite press junket. and they had announced it that morning. So every venue wanted to talk about it. And I was like, no! Because of course, it was emotional. I mean, who are we if we're not? I mean, if Michael Scott, you know. Michael Scott is Thunder Mifflin. He is The Office. I was so freaked out. And literally, I told Creed, I'm like, okay, anytime they talk about this, just pretend like we can't hear the feed. Like, I think the feed's going, I'm sorry, I'm getting some interference. What was the question? Wishing him all the best. Like, we had this little thing where we would figure out how to get out of the conversation. So.
Wow.
But I was definitely freaked out. And I mean, the great thing about our show is that I feel like Greg Daniels is so trustworthy, and I feel like he's picked so many great writers, and I feel like if anything could have survived a couple more years without Steve Carell, it was because of Greg Daniels. But I was nervous. I was nervous about Spader, just because he's not a comedy guy. I mean, he's brilliant, but he's not a comedy guy. And I kind of had this little thing like, oh no, he's holding the baby. He's going to drop the baby. Don't drop the baby. And also I was intimidated because he's like a movie star, and I had seen so many all of his movies, and you know, and there was so much sexual tension between the two of us.
Sorry. So much sexual tension.
So much.
But,
oh my God.
But I felt like there was sexual tension between me and Spader.
They're probably even more. Even more.
No,
sure.
Seriously, Spader.
He loved
and anyone.
Right. Yeah.
There's sexual tension.
This is true. The season 8 Christmas episode, there was one take where he's sort of like Meredith thinks she's actually maybe going to go to dinner with him or something, like that she's got a chance with him. And he sort of touches her cheek like, no, no, no. And she goes to hug me. And I literally, one take, I grabbed his ass. And then I was like, immediately when we stopped, I was like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I just felt like, oh my God. He goes, no. He goes, that was the right thing to do. They didn't end up using it. But I was like, don't grab James Spader's ass, Kate. What the fuck
is
wrong with you?
So amazing.
I was so nervous. I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no.
He's
an amazing human being. Yeah.
Pool party, supposedly at Robert California's house. That was the hardest episode for me to do.
Wow.
I was in the pool a really,
oh God, that's right.
really, really long time.
Oh my, and it was one of the hardest for me because I had to be in a bathing suit on camera in my 40s. Ugh. My dream. Not.
And you
nuts.
Think like, you're in a pool. Why are you complaining? But like, because of like hypothermia, they had it heated.
It was heated, but it was gross.
It was heated,
it felt
but
like,
it was indoors. So it was kind of like an old Holiday Inn that you can swim in that's hot. And then you're in it for like, in a day, maybe 9 hours.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like in the water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you guys were doing those chicken fights with Ellie on your shoulder. Yeah, oh my God, that was crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. Again, the sexual tension was off the charts. So we had how important it was, you know, for the pilot specifically, but then the guest casting after that, to not have any stars.
Yes.
To keep it as unknown people.
Yes. Yeah. And I remember even Carol Burnett at the TCAs, she said she loved our show during her speech and she wanted to be involved. And I think they were like, nope, too famous, too funny, too much
of a
legend.
Your mom. Yes, that's right. That was
an idea. That was an idea, but yeah. But then, you know, of course, Kathy Bates. Come on.
Kathy Bates.
Come on.
Spader.
And Spader, yeah.
Will.
Well, oh, I loved working with Will. Oh, so fun. Oh my God. Just the greatest. He had remembered we had had dinner literally in like 94 in New York when he first got hired on SNL with Andy Richter. And I was like, I couldn't believe that he remembered. And I remember being embarrassed because I had a really embarrassing ex-boyfriend who was a real douchebag. He's like, I felt really intimidated because all you guys were from Chicago and I felt like you guys were like so great at, I was like, what? It's so crazy. Anyway, but I love Will Ferrell.
That's the best. Great. My story, similar to that, was Kathy Bates went to SMU.
Oh, right.
She was there before me. But while I was there, she had already won the Oscar.
Oh, my gosh.
And she came back to, like, they opened a new theater. And my mom got a book of Shakespeare's sonnets, sent it to Kathy Bates, told her that I was a really big fan, and I went to SMU, and I did this show. And got it returned. I believe the only autographed item that I have of anyone that I can recall, like to Brian, you know, good luck in your future, blah, 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 Kathy Bates. So I hear she's going to be on the show. And now here we are. And we were in the makeup trailer. And I came up behind her and I said, Kathy, I want to show you. It wasn't her first day. So I did not want to seem like a crazy stalker. But I came up behind her and I said, you know, I just want to show you that my mom, and of course, I wasn't expecting her to remember. I'm sure she's signed,
a lot of things.
But just to say like, how crazy is this? That my mom did
full
this.
Circle. That's nuts.
I know. Crazy.
That's nuts.
Crazy.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
She then had me arrested, but
as
it was
she
all right.
would do from time. She had me arrested a lot too. No,
yeah.
That was just a little fun thing we used to do with,
get people arrested. What do you remember about going in to shoot the finale?
I remember trying to be as present as possible and just to try to enjoy all of it because it was such a great ending. And then I remember Greg just saying, one more take. How about this? I remember we were all 2 hours late for our own wrap party. That people were texting and calling like, where are you? Like, it's like no one wanted to end. No one wanted to end. There's so few moments like that in this business where you can actually feel the emotional part of the joy that all those years represented and the way all of our lives changed and the way that the show continues to speak to people and like people feel so connected and they feel so comfortable. It's so rare. I mean, really, I make jokes like if I got hit by a car tomorrow, I'd be fine. this was such an amazing chapter, you know. And so few actors get this. So few actors. It's really an honor.
Why do you think that young people have connected to the show? Why is the show more popular now than
it
was then?
Two reasons. The most basic reason is that being in an office like Dunder Mifflin with one big room with all the offices, it's much like being in a classroom. And Michael Scott is like, he's the boss, but he's like the teacher. I mean, I think kids can always relate to having to sit next to someone that they didn't necessarily pick, but they're kind of stuck with for years. And also, I think the show is so smart. There's so many subtle things. You can watch it a million times and see different things that you didn't see before, that you weren't paying attention. Like you can notice different things. There's so many Easter eggs and like weird little things that just kind of keep, and some of it's like stuff that got cut. That show, like, I don't remember the weight loss episode where like people still have questions about like Meredith's skin, because there's a whole storyline where Meredith got sun poisoning on a fishing boat, and it got worse and worse as the week went on, and it never got explained. And I remember Steve was like, he thought it was so brilliant that they just didn't worry about explaining it. Because how many times do you work with people that you're not that close to, and like something's going on, and you're like, I don't even want to know what's going on with it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not even going to. And also, like, skin is like a weird personal thing. So you wouldn't be like, what's wrong with your skin?
Right.
Like, no one would do, you know. So it's like this kind of wonderful thing that, like, it's just, we're just kind of existing as a real documentary would happen, where some things are not explained. And I feel like kids are so smart. And I feel like they feel like they're smarter maybe than their parents by the way that they notice The Office, in a way that maybe people who have been watching very typical sitcoms for years don't necessarily plug into immediately. I feel like they're not as tainted by that. I don't know. That's just a thought.
I think you're right. That's great. All right, last question.
Okay.
Hardest question.
Okay. Uh-oh.
What does The Office mean to you?
The Office means joy, validation, success, love, fun, great process, and probably the best part of my life.
I knew you were going to say love before you said it. I know. I almost said it for you, and I was like, no, let's let her find it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Kate, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad we could get drunk like this. This
is
awesome.
So fun. This coffee has, you have no idea what's in it, actually. No clue.
You don't. No, I love you, Brian. You're so awesome.
No,
I always loved watching your process too. I have to say this, because I always felt like you just had certain instincts that, like, just, I feel like you were such a co-creator, and Kevin, like, just in your not speaking as well, but like there would be things that you would just, it was, you were fearless and really amazing. And I feel like, yes, the writing is amazing, but I feel like no one else could do what you did. No one.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, that is all for the one and only Kate Flannery. Kate, I know you called me fearless there, but you are the fearless one. I admire you so much, and I cannot wait to get absolutely wasted with you again soon. And you know what? Same to all you listeners out there. Let's do it sometime, as long as you're of age, of course. But until then, please join me back here next week for another interview. I need to go fill up this coffee cup. The Office Deep Dive is hosted and executive produced by me, Brian Baumgartner, alongside our executive producer, Leng Lee. Our senior producer is Tessa Kramer. Our producer is Emily Carr, and our assistant editor is Diego Tapia. My main man in the booth is Alec Moore. Our theme song, Bubble and Squeak, performed by my great friend Cree Bratton, and the episode was mixed by Seth Olansky.